You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Live and ready to talk about Arsenal versus PSV. Where's Matt, Johnny? Where's Matt?
Currently boarding a flight,
Flaking out.
Yeah, wondering if he gets some, you know, salted peanuts with his flight, complimentary. That's what's on his mind right now. He's not watching Arsenal. He's not caring about him. Well, I'll give him. He will care about Arsenal, but he's not watching Arsenal. He's worried about what flight snacks he can get.
He listened to all of the pre-match narrative about people taking a rest for PSV, and he thought that was inclusive of him. Disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful.
Arsenal have earned him some recreational time.
Yes,
and we're like, no.
You've got to be on these podcasts. Johnny, how do you feel about topping the group?
Yeah, mate. Great. But the difference is you could have asked me that, a week or two ago? So the fact is I thought that us topping the group was going to mean that this game was going to be handled differently. Lots to talk about anyway. I'm sure we're going to get involved in that. But yeah, you know, the main thing that we come away from is ultimately, do we have anyone injured? There are, but we'll get onto that.
We'll get onto it. All right. Good morning and welcome to a new edition of the Arsenal Opinion Podcast. I am joined on this European Tuesday evening by Johnny Cochran. How you doing, Johnny?
Yeah, mate. You know, it's actually quite an interesting game. Considering it was a dead rubber, I definitely think there are things to talk about, to think about, you know, and potentially to be a little concerned about when it comes to Arteta's makeup and, you know, how he approaches different situations. But you know, considering it was a game that didn't mean nothing, I certainly think there are a few, conversation points that have been drawn from it.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. It was bit of a weird game, dead rubber game taken seriously for absolutely no reason at all. People are already saying in the comments that a Pete Arteta rotation meltdown is about to happen. You are absolutely correct, Untold Football. Absolutely correct. I'm not mucking around today, Johnny. Let's get into it.
Hottest of takes.
Hottest of takes.
The hottest of takes.
The AOP. Hottest of takes. Make it spicy.
Johnny, on a fairly tepid evening, how can you take the spice levels to level 9 with your hottest of takes?
Well, my hottest of takes is that Arteta is rightfully getting the praise he deserves for serious advancements in the way that our mentality has shifted. He's changed the culture around the club. The players have completely bought in. We're seeing far better football than we've seen in a decade more. You know, it's right to give him the flowers he deserves. But it's becoming increasingly clear that Arteta does have blind spots. And he does have weaknesses in the whole sphere that makes up being a manager. And that is squad management, in my opinion. Because when we got through top of the group, the reason why I'm like, let's go hard, let's go for it, is because this game meant nothing. It meant nothing. And so I want to be seeing players pulling on the Arsenal jersey who I don't even know who they are. I need to go and Google them. That's what I'm talking about right now. Oh, Arsenal lost 5-0 away from PSV. Don't care. Don't care. Irrelevant. Couple of kids that are run around. Great. You know, no one's paying attention. Let's crack on. Big players get a week off. And I don't know what it is about him. And there is a caveat, but we're going to get into this anyway. So the only part I'd kind of defend him on. But in general, the way he uses some of his most important players, I would say, is at best reckless, at worst, you know, just ridiculously crazy. So, I think that despite the fact that our manager's having a fantastic season, this still remains, his squad management still remains a stick to beat him with. That's my hottest of takes.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We've got Matthew D'Souza saying, fans need to stop being armchair physios and sports medicine experts. Listen, I will tell you, every single sports expert in the world would have said, do not play William Saliba tonight. How many more cases of Arteta breaking players or our seasons finishing flat and fatigued do we need to see before we can say, hey, listen, I've spent 20 minutes on Google looking up what they do in sports science, and I don't think relentlessly playing your favorite players over and over again, even in games that don't matter, is going to hurt you. We've been hurt by Thomas Partey, injured twice in training. Tomiyasu, who has had a 3-season consistent record of breaking down because he's overplayed, has what? He's just broken down. Gabby Jesus injured, Odegaard injured, Ben White getting those tight hamstrings early this season. These are the acts of a manager that gets too excited and treats each game as an individual match rather than looking more broadly at the bigger picture. And nothing summed it up better than tonight, because I'm not even going to have a separate hottest of takes. You could have left all of those players at home. You could have taken the under 15s out of there. We could have been beaten 10-0. I could have seen a player vomit on the pitch because he was so nervous, because he's so young, and it wouldn't have mattered. It wouldn't have mattered a jot. And I do think if you step back and look at the lineup, you've got Raul Waters, who is like a preseason favorite. We've seen him in 2 preseasons. He's gone to America twice. He's played games. Everybody purrs over him. And then when you get an opportunity to play him in a Champions League game, you pick Cedric Suarez, a player we've been trying to get rid of for literally years. I don't understand the mindset of it. And actually, I do. Here's the thing. I do understand the mindset. He is... For a manager who is swimming in data, sometimes he's extremely emotional about certain things that he does. And there are two things that, well, there's one belief that he has. If you want to be a top, top player, you have to be better than fatigue. You have to be better than injuries. You have to play 70 games a season. And it doesn't, you know, and to the normal fan, that sounds like, Arteta. He's so strong. He's so tough. This is pure elite mentality. But fatigue doesn't care what you think. Fatigue will always catch up with you in the end. And we have had at least 3 seasons now with Arteta where our season has broken down because players that should be wrapped in cotton wool are not wrapped in cotton wool. And tonight is just peak Mikel Arteta. He wants everybody on the plane. He wants everybody to be taking a non-competitive game extremely competitively. And we'll pay the cost like we did last season. And it's disappointing, really disappointing.
Well, that kind of brings us into our first subject anyway. Risking it all for, and for what, eh? But Pete, I think this is a good opportunity to let's at least talk, you know, there's no point in us just ganging together and, you know, agreeing. Let's look at some of the arguments for. So some of the ones that I've heard out there are, you know, ultimately Arteta, may have seen in the past, when we lose momentum, whether even if it's losing games that don't ultimately matter, you know, you get beat in the Carabao Cup and we might not care, but all of a sudden we're losing in the Premier League. So momentum is certainly an argument. Like, we don't want to be going out there getting walloped after we've just been beaten by Villa. in, you know, frustrating fashion, but we were beaten. Suddenly we're on a two-game losing skid. So that's one argument. The other one being, I've heard, is it's even £2.5 million when it comes to winning the game. And, of course, the football club don't need that cash to be able to, you know, spend. But in terms of FFP balancing, it's an extra bit of money that we will be able to spend on our team. You know, I can understand the logic there, at least. And then, yeah, finally, I think it's, oh, well, we can't have some players coming through and starting, you know, some of them young players playing out of position without having at least a core to help them through the game. So those are some of the points, the counterpoints out there. What are you making of those?
I don't think, well, so the on the prize money, it's like, come on, guys. I just don't think football managers are sitting there thinking about the balance sheet. That's like a commercial driver. Like we've got one of the richest sports franchise owners on the planet. I don't think that he's thanking Arteta for getting that 2.8 million. And the counterpoint to that would be, well, getting that 2.8 million, if it costs us Saliba in February, that, you know, losing Saliba jeopardizes our title push and it jeopardizes our ability to move forward in the Champions League. So I don't really buy that. And I think the argument about momentum, I think it applies more to fans than players. You know, like, I don't think players that were staying at home tonight, if they watched the kids lose 3-0, I don't think they're affected by that. I don't think players are affected by losses as badly as we think they are. I think they shake them off. That's what they're trained to do. The reason that I can't be a professional footballer, outside about 50 things, is that if I make a bad mistake, I will think about that mistake for the next 5 years. If I let the ball go through my legs, I'm thinking about that as a 39-year-old. When I made the mistake at 12. These pros, they're trained to shake it off. They get it out of the system and they move on. I think that rewarding players with an early night watching Love Island and going into the Brighton game and the Liverpool game with a little bit more energy, I think that that is more beneficial than what they did tonight. Like, we put them on a plane for no reason. I know it's only a short plane journey. We put them on a pitch and risked them for no reason. It just felt like, have you seen that meme where people are like, what would you take, $10 million or one evening with Jay-Z explaining how to be a good entrepreneur? And those guys are like, I take the meeting with Jay-Z. It kind of felt like that we were handed the opportunity to rest players tonight. And the alternative was, being together and showing that we could win with fire in our tummies, as Arteta said before the game. And it's like, one is an obvious win and one is chest thumping for the sake of chest thumping. And Arteta chose the chest thumping tonight. And I just worry that we're going to pay for it. I mean, William Saliba broke down last year because of a stress fracture, too much load on a young body. Once again, how many games has he missed this season? I mean, it's painful. It's really painful viewing.
I think, you know, the comment on here from Surfer X kind of highlights a little bit where I'd go with it. I definitely think Saliba is the most egregious one. He's just too important. You can't be taking punts with him. Like, very happy to see Declan Rice not playing, you know, at the start of the not starting, I should say. But, you know, Saliba, he just plays every single game. If you can't rest him in this game, I don't know what's going on. And people are like, well, who would you play? Well, Kivior goes central straight away. I don't really care. Even the likes of Ben White, if you had to play someone, I would play Ben White over, you know, Saliba. Because Ben White's had a few games out when Tomiyasu was playing and whatnot. Saliba plays every minute. And it's crazy. Because you've got a player who, quite frankly, is so important. But it leads me on to the other little caveat, right, where I will give Arteta a little bit of slack on. And that is, and people might find this a bit weird because it might have felt like the most alarming move. But when he played Declan Rice as centre-half, it was half an hour at the end, and I actually will give him a little bit of a pass for that, in my opinion, because there are some things that happen in football out of your control. People get injured at different times. You need to know what options are available to you. And simply put, how are you ever going to know what is available to you if you never give it a chance? And what better game to do it than a game that doesn't even matter if it goes horrendously wrong and we lose loads? You know, if he was trialing Declan Rice in a key FA Cup game or something like that, the fans would be like, what's going on? So I don't mind the fact that there was a little bit of experimentation if it provided him answers that he felt like he needed, you know, he might need to know over the course of a whole season. But in general, like, again, the Saliba one just felt like an absolute liberty, much like Jesus coming on at the end of the game. What are you doing? It's like you're trying to rub it in, you know? It did feel like it.
I agree with you. It felt like he was rubbing it in. And it's just frustrating. I see some of these comments here and it's like, I hear, like, we've got Tomek Bethel. I hear your argument, but it's also great for club identity, the crest, if you will, to be a club that wins regardless. I don't agree. I honestly don't agree. I think, you know, what's good for the club crest is having a fit squad that can compete for trophies at the end of the season. No one will look back on this draw at the end of the season. Like, if Saliba is out, people will point to this game and say, that was a silly decision by a manager that hasn't learned his lesson. And, it, you know, also worth noting that fatigue is cumulative. Like, people will be like, well, Saliba didn't get injured, so it's fine. It's no. The reason that all of these World Cups and all of these games are having an effect on a lot of players this season is because the cumulative effect over a few seasons impacts players. And it leads to injury. It's like, if you've got a player who's had a stress factor, rest him. Rest him. There's no reason not to. And I totally agree with you, Johnny. I'm thinking back to Ashley Cole, who was out on loan at Crystal Palace, and then Silvino got into all sorts of bother with his passport. Wenger was going to sell Ashley Cole, one of the best left-backs in Premier League history. He was going to sell him. And then he got his chance, and he took his chance. And you're like, couldn't Sosa or Rule Waters or, you know, like Wanneri, like, couldn't they start, like, see what they're about? And it also, you know, those starts, you know, we've had players that we've got excited about in the past and we're like, we need to see Zetterlund. And then Zetterlund comes on an important game and you're like, oh no, he needs to go out online. I'm thinking about Miguel Aziz. He was a player. And then we saw him in the... Yeah. Yeah, we were like, he's going to be the next one. And then he came on the pitch and he didn't work out. Patino was another example, not quite ready. Balogun against Brentford. Sometimes showing people where these players are at in their career is good for fans, because it's like, all right, well, don't get too excited. Take the poster down. That'd be weird.
Yeah.
But he blew that opportunity. And if he's not going to play them in games like that, when is he going to give them a chance? Like, he literally said before the game, I didn't get a chance at Barcelona. I know how it feels to be stuck in the queue. We had an opportunity to unclog that queue and he didn't use it. And it feels wrong on a lot of levels.
It does. It felt weird because he half did it. There were a number of key players that got, I mean, apart from the actual piss taking at the end of the game where he's bringing Jesus on, Saka, Martinelli, obviously, you know, they didn't put any minutes into their legs. Certainly Saka. If I'd have seen Saka on, I think I would have, you know, a vein in my head would have popped. But there were key players that got very little minutes, if at all. But yeah, the likes of Wanneri, you know, any young defensive options as well, these guys should have, like, I just do not understand why you would not use this opportunity. It just feels so weird to me. And it's almost like, I don't know whether it's an ego thing on his part. Like, who cares if we lose? There's not very often for a massive club, you know, that are going for major trophies, it's not very often you'll have a game in the middle of the season that literally means nothing. But this is it. And surely you're in a situation where you can take the opportunity that it affords you. But, you know, it just feels like that's what it is, a missed opportunity. It was a missed opportunity to see some different options and give them a time in a game that, you know, is of a decent level. And then we can learn things.
We've got Indy Pete who says, playing devil's advocate, Arteta would argue it's about creating a winning culture. Again, I would point back to, what does he do in the League Cup? You know, doesn't put great teams out in the League Cup. What will he do in the FA Cup this year? Probably won't put a great team out in that. I think it's just like in and those games are consequences. Like you lose those games and you are out of trophies, so it's a little bit different. But when it's like a free roll of the dice, I mean, I'm going a bit over the top here, but I don't think that. I think that when you're creating a winning culture, you want to bring people in because a culture is not just 12 or 14 players. You know, we need to expand that out. I think a winning culture is about giving young players a taste of, you know, the high life. Like, here, if you work hard, you could be doing this every week. And I think a winning culture is about looking over the long term. And I think Arteta is a bit of a short-termist when it comes to how he plays. And weirdly, Arsene Wenger's biggest problem, you know, I think it was like it was before Shad Forsyth came to Arsenal, and Wenger would be like, you know, we'd get a crash of injuries around November, December. Then the players would get fit, and then they go for top four in March. And Wenger would blame hair peels. He would blame luck. He wouldn't blame the fact that he overtrained his players and he picked the same team every week until somebody broke. And Mikel Arteta was part of that Arsene Wenger period of time. And it feels like if he took anything from Arsene Wenger, it was that you play your best team every time. And if he wants to get to the level of Pep, I think that he has to address that because Pep rotates more often. And I don't buy the, well, he's got a much bigger squad. We've invested a lot of money in our squad now. I don't think we can be shying away from where we are squad-wise. You know, we're a title contender. We have enough depth in most positions. We should use that depth. Otherwise, what was the point in bringing it in?
Yeah, and you know, and finally, there are some points, you know, the comments, but this is what I was thinking. If we had, like, say we were blooding five or six youngsters in the team, if you, alongside those youngsters, kept, like, a stable core, I could understand that argument because it might be detrimental to a team of youngsters to take a, you know, a 5-6-0 wallop in and then, you know, maybe their heads go down and maybe you want to just keep it competitive because it will keep them feeling confident. But I would understand that argument, but we didn't play a team of youngsters. You know, Reece Nelson should not need his hand held at this stage. Eddie Nketiah, these are guys that are, you know, they want to be involved in the squad. It's not like we had Nwaneri and people like that. It's Mo Elneny. These are tried and tested professionals. So, you know, these people should not need their hand held by William Saliba and Gabriel. Stick some random on there. Like, you know, it's not like, again, it's not like we've padded it with all 17-year-olds. Just get, if you're gonna play the likes of Cedric and that, then make sure that none of our first teamers are, you know, getting heavy minutes at whatsoever.
And I don't mind losing 3-0 when it's 17-year-olds best in their first game. That I don't mind it.
Not a problem.
You did mention him. We're going to go right into it. Mo Elneny, the most lethal man from 37 yards on the team, came back into the side. Thought he had a really decent game. He hit a wicked shot that hit the outside of the post. We know that he works on those in training. I do love the man. I've got to admit it. I love Mo Elneny. And I don't want to hear any slander about him. I hear he's an incredible guy. I think he's taking his coaching badges at the moment. He's just happy to be at Arsenal. He's a fan. He's a fan in an Arsenal shirt with you know, good technical skill set. He can do a job in a game like that. But the injury gods came for him, Johnny. Their lightning bolt struck the pitch and it hit him. It wasn't Saliba. Has Mo Elneny taken a spiritual strike for the team here? What did you make of his performance and what did you make of the injury?
Yeah, it's just so unlucky, isn't it? Because when you got a player like that who is just such a, you know, I don't think they actually do it at this level of football, but, you know, the kinds of level of football that we play at, you will often get at the end of the year a Clubman of the Year award, which literally is a most dedicated person to the team. The person who turns up a training every week, you know, collects the subs in, takes the nets down. Go on, mate, we'll give you Clubman of the Year. That is what Mo Elneny should be getting. He's a top bloke. I really like him. I'm done calling for Elneny to leave the club. Not that I ever was heavily, but in general, I've not necessarily thought he was good enough to take us to the next level. He's not. But in and around the club, you always need people who are dedicated, who are willing to do, you know, the nasty shifts every now and then, playing in games that no one really wants to play, but they're just always going to be there. And for that, I just love Elneny. He never rocks the boat. He's a good character. I certainly think he's quite consistent. He's not up to the level that, again, would have him pushing for a first team, but he can certainly come in and perform ably for short periods. But that's why it's so, you know, frustrating when you've got a player who doesn't get much game time, that they get bitten by the injury bug. But it's also somewhat to be expected if you've got a player, who, again, who's not played much. Suddenly he starts exerting himself and he's, you know, had a muscle injury. It's frustrating, but hopefully he comes back soon, because you will need players like Elneny's throughout a season if you're going to be successful.
Yeah, and I think that the injury is just part of the return to fitness. You have to, you know, when you've had a serious injury, it takes a while to get the body back up to speed. And then when you get put in a hardcore professional environment, like a Champions League game, things tend to tweak. Hopefully it's not that serious. But yeah, I agree with you. You need people like that in and around the training ground. We've got enough number sixes now where we shouldn't need him. I actually probably don't have enough number sixes. Thomas Partey's never available. But yeah, I thought he had a good performance out there today. And I suspect that this will probably be his last contract at Arsenal. I think we need to upgrade with a younger player. Maybe Patino comes back and he's that guy moving forward. I do think it is worth noting, though, we don't have a lot of experienced heads. And you don't have to be like a title-winning person to be experienced. Just having people that are a little bit older in the camp help the young professionals, you know, when they're buying a house, managing their money, all of those little bits. Like, I think that a dressing room without those older heads to guide young players isn't a strong dressing room. So I wonder if we do replace him with Paulinho at Fulham, I wonder whether we do sort of like break the mold, because we're going to sign, because we need a bit of experience in that midfield. But what did you think about that, Johnny? We could potentially lose Thomas Partey this window as well, another 30-year-old.
We've not really talked heavily on the Thomas Partey thing, because he's ultimately not been a factor. He hasn't been on the field. So we've, you know, kind of out of sight, out of mind. But I think that story's just come to an end now. I think we should just wash our hands of him. I really do. It's not that he's not a good player, but if for whatever reason we can't rely on him for as long as we have this year, it's just not worth having him. We might as well use those resources for another player who can step in and, you know, affect what's going on the pitch. But there's talk that January might provide an opportunity for him to get a move, maybe to the Middle East or whatever. Right now, I'd bite their hands off. I really would. But I'd really need to see that reinvested in the team. We are not going to get over the line, I don't think, if we don't address something.
Be a Premier League player as well, right, Johnny? Like, you can't sign a player that's going to take 7 months to bed in. Villa aren't going to sell Douglas Luiz. I'd be surprised if Fulham are going to sell, wouldn't you?
Maybe. Right. You might get them out. You might get them out, yeah. Yep. But every bit of it is going to be, you know, a fair bit of money. You say it's got to be a Premier League. I would take a German league or something like that. Like, what I wouldn't have is, you know, just necessarily going to Ligue 1 right now, rolling that little roulette wheel. Don't know whether you're getting Eden Hazard or Jovinho. You know, but yeah, I just feel like our squad is not built to accommodate a major absence for a prolonged period, to a certain extent, in unexplained fashion. So I really would, if they're going to get rid, just get rid now, because we are going to need support.
All right, let's move on to another topic. Reece Lightning or frightening, Johnny? There was a lot of debate on this very show about whether he should get a new deal. He got the new deal. He hasn't played very much. He got his opportunity tonight. What did you make of the performance? Should we be seeing more of Reece or less?
Do you know what? I actually think it was the brightest spot from the whole game. I thought Reece looked really decent. Really did. I liked his poise on the ball. He was aggressive with his running. And it kind of, you know, the biggest compliment I guess I could give him is that it was reminiscent of Saka's influence on the field. It's obviously not to the same level, but it felt like, you know, in that particular game, arguably our best player was right wing. And that's what it's like when Saka's playing there. You know, you feel like it's a real threat there. And it felt like there was a real threat. I like the way he linked up with Eddie, for the goal as well. It was nice. And I like the fact that, you know, I do feel like we should see Reece a little more often, if I'm honest. I don't think there's a wild, you know, drop off from Saka. Like, you know, it's a complete chasm. I think Reece is a decent player and he's showing it the more opportunities he gets.
Yeah, I thought he was good tonight. Nice to see him get an assist. I guess Matt Scott thinks that he would walk into 90% of Premier League starting 11s. Not sure about that, Matt. I think he's an adequate backup. I think the reality is if we want to see Saka getting rotated more, we need a world-class backup, and I don't think we've got that. I've been pondering whether Reece Nelson is going to be the new Mo Elneny. You know, good for squad, good for the squad, loves Arsenal, loves being a Londoner, Highlander, you know, be good for the young players coming through, because I just don't see him getting a lot of minutes out there. But I thought he put in a good performance. I like his pace. I'd like to see him be more involved in the Premier League so he takes the burden off Saka, but you know, there's no point in giving him games if he doesn't have output off the back of it. So we'll see how that one pans out. Let's get back into this one, Johnny. Eddie Kruger, after a big miss, which we lambasted and said it wasn't good enough, Eddie stepped up, picked up the pass from Reece Nelson, tidy little finish into the bottom corner, low across the goalkeeper. What did you make of Eddie's overall impact today?
I think he had a good game. So this is where I am with Eddie, right? The problem is he cannot prove himself to me in a game like this, because my question marks about Eddie are not whether he can get himself a goal at PSV away when we're already through top of the group. It was a very, very good finish. That is what I want to do. Let's be clear on that. That is a top finish. That is a... You know, at the end of the day, dead rubber or not, it's European football, it's the Champions League, and it was a very good finish. It was Champions League level. That is what Eddie can show. But my questions come about Eddie when he starts for a prolonged period, some big games in there, and suddenly that initial burst of form he might have just dissipates, and he looks like he becomes easy to manage in big games against big sides. Is he clinical enough when you are only getting that one chance in a game? You know, I would need to see it. Certainly at this stage, I would need to see it. So scoring that goal today doesn't, you know, go anywhere to answer that question, which is more pressing from my side. But it just never hurts your case when you turn up, you play a big game, and you finish in spectacular fashion. And that was a top, top level striking finish. So, you know, again, well done to Eddie. Great game today. I'm not sure it, you know, changes the narrative on him though.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're still going to need another forward at some point that gives us some additional options. I'm looking at his stats online at the moment, and it says he's only got 6 goals this season. I thought he was. I thought he had more than that, but I've got 6 goals and 3 assists. That's not right, is it, Johnny?
Probably.
Is it right? Okay, cool.
But he got a hat trick against Sheffield United, so that's 3 right there. But I mean, how many more did he get? Really? Is it 6 in the league? You mean?
It's 6. It's 5 in the league, and 1 in the Champions League.
Yeah. Well, I would say so. I mean, he's not started all the games, has he? But. Yeah,
it's true. Well, still, not a bad return so far this season. I'd love to see him get into double figures for goals, and he's not doing bad. It's December the 12th, still plenty of games to play. But yeah, I love the finish. And I think that's where his level's at the moment. Coming in for Jesus, giving him some time off. I think sometimes he's good. Coming in from wide, I think if he can up his finishing rate and show a little bit more personality in certain games, I think he'll be doing well for us. But as a backup striker, it works for me. I mean, think Richarlison only just scored his first goal with his foot and he was a £60 million striker for Spurs. So I'm happy with that. All right. I don't know whether I was going to go to our final topic, the late subs. It was a horror show of substitutes. We brought on all the big names. Do you think we needed to do that, Johnny? Or do you think that Arteta was thinking, well, I brought them out here, I might as well roll them out?
Yeah, but this, you know, again, and I know we've talked about this a little bit at the start, but do you know one of the names that really frustrates me out of this? Emile Smith Rowe. Now, granted, I don't know the ins and outs of his fitness, but ultimately, if you're on the bench, you should be able to play the game. Like, I don't think he's just there for a big day out at this stage. And you're coming on with like 5 minutes to go. And there's players on there putting in big minutes who, like Kai Havertz, who there's a good chance he's starting against Brighton. Why is he doing that? Why are you playing the whole game? Get Emile Smith-Rowe some solid minutes in his legs. At the very least, we need to know whether we can rely on him to get through games. You know, we can't. You can't just coddle him if he's back fit. He's going to have to start playing. And you look at the subs, he comes on that late, but then Gabby Jesus is standing alongside him and you're thinking, why are you doing that? It doesn't really matter if Eddie plays the whole game. I mean, obviously, he'd been challenged and it looked like injured, but you don't even need to put a striker on. Put someone else on. Put Muneri up front or Kai Havertz and, you know, whatever, or Smith Rowe, whatever way you want to play it. But yeah, it just felt like it was a, you know, I can't say, I just don't think Arteta cares about this stuff. I really don't care. Think he cares, but he will care when there's a whole host of injuries and he's saying, oh, I can't pick for my team. But I do think you have to manage your squad in those moments.
Yeah, sometimes in moments like that, you wonder if he needs stronger people around him. That's what I wonder. But I also think that Arteta doesn't like that. He's not that type of, you know, I think certain managers like to have a team around them that's going to sort of guide them. Pep Guardiola seems like that sort of guy. Hires the best people in the business, seems to listen. You know, we watched him for, what, 2-3 seasons with Arteta sitting next to him, like yabbering in his ear. I get the impression that Arteta is king. He's the god. He's the go-to man. His decision is final. A little bit like Arsene Wenger. You know, Arsene Wenger never refreshed his backroom staff because he never wanted to listen to his backroom staff. And I do worry that Mikel might be a little bit like that, because I think if he had a more experienced head or a stronger voice in the room, he wouldn't have made some of those decisions today. And I definitely don't think he would have been bringing in these big names for the last 20 minutes in a game that was pretty rubbish, to be perfectly honest. But there we are, Johnny. We've got Brighton coming up next. I'm going to the Brighton game, Johnny.
I very much am envious. It would be good. The atmosphere is going to be great now. I'm sure you'll be adding to it. I will not be even able to probably watch all of the game because I'm at a Christmas function. So,
Is it for you or is it a stand-up?
No, as in my wife's family. We do it a week earlier for her, and then we do my family on the day kind of thing. So we're into that season. It's Christmas festivities.
Yeah.
I might be having a roast on the weekend and I'm very excited about it.
You're going to try and camouflage in a little AirPod so you can listen to the game.
15, it's been known 48. To happen. It's been known to happen. And I think we might try and find a solution. But yeah, it's one of those, you know, husband, father duties where you just strap in. And if you can nick any football watching game time out of it, then you've done well.
Lovely. All right. Well, I will be on a plane on Friday, heading back to the UK. Cannot wait to get into London. I hear that it's pretty cold, so I'll be wrapping up warm, no doubt. We will be back with some form of before the whistle. We'll be doing a makeup because we didn't do a before the whistle before this game. I mean, it was such a... such a nothing game. It didn't really feel like it merited 45 minutes of intense chat. So we'll get the Patreon listeners a makeup on that one. But Johnny, unless you've got anything else to say.
No, all good.
Magic. We'll say ciao for now. Thank you for listening. Remember, leave that 5-star review.
Social Podcast Network.